5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we are back for an all-new bonus episode of Keep It. I am Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. And what do you think is the best VMA category? Do you remember the best dance video? I remember one year Jennifer Lopez won it for Waiting for Tonight, and that was like a stacked category. Best dance video, I think, has some energy and verb to it. I say this because it's now a Croc ceremony with nothing going for it. But what do you think?
I think my favorite category is most iconic VMA performance.
No, you've already upset me. Excuse me. There is now a fan-voted VMA. We're talking about the Video Music Awards, which aired last night, MTV Institution, going back to when The Cars won the first video of the year in 1984 for You Might Think. Great video. There is a
great song.
Love the song. Oh, who doesn't love The Cars? Great band. There is now a category, most iconic video, and it's for all time. And people can vote on it, which already feels contradictory to me. It's either a fact that it's the most iconic or it's not. It's not something that we put up for a debate. But the person who won this, the most iconic VMA performance of all time, is Katy Perry for Roar. Ira, I rarely say this word. It's your word at this point. But payola, how did this occur?
You know what? To borrow a tweet that I saw last night, you know that this is fake because have you ever seen anybody put on Katy Perry's VMA performance of Roar at an Afters?
No, and also I think there are literally more legendary boxing-themed performances in life. Like,
there are more legendary Katy Perry-themed performances.
Yes. As I've said before, by the way, I do believe more respect should be put on her Vegas residency, which is one of the best live things I've ever seen. But this video, and also, by the way, even among her number one hits, Roar is just not it for me. Roar could be by anybody.
Roar is, well, I mean, we know who it was by.
You mean Bonnie McKee?
No, I mean, we remember the controversy when it first dropped, that it was very much giving Brave by Sarah Bareilles.
Oh, yes. I want to see you be brave and not do that song anymore because I don't care for it.
Yeah, but we've brought this up on the show before. We watch Katy Perry's Super Bowl performance often. That's a great performance.
I literally watch the Bon Appetit video all the time more than I watch this VMA's performance.
Let's just talk about Katy and get it over with, right?
Yes.
During her Video Vanguard performance, which... Sure.
You know what? Great. I mean, at this point...
She has fun videos.
And also, by the way, there's a list now. Billboard.com is doing this list of the 25 best pop stars of the 21st century. And Katy Perry somehow came in at number 25. Okay, I know we're in an era where it's not particularly awesome to compliment Katy Perry or we feel like she's peaked or something. She's better than 25. I think like, she does deserve some flowers. And she's coming in behind, like... BTS, which, okay, maybe there's an argument there, but she came in behind One Direction. Babe, they have, like, two hits here. It makes no sense to rank them ahead of Katy Perry.
Okay, well, let's not get into that.
You can't be standing them right now.
I'm a directioner.
All right.
Okay? I was listening to Midnight Memories last night.
You know that I enjoy the song Night Changes, and I do wonder if it's about, of course, nocturnal emissions. But...
I will agree with you, though, that Katy, it is... We are in an era where it's okay to, quote-unquote, diss her. But she deserves better than that. And I think that last night, the Video Vanguard performance proved why we enjoy Katy Perry. She's never been a bad performer. Us dragging the Roar performance is not saying that it's bad or that she's bad. It's just that it's not particularly memorable and no one has thought about it since it aired.
Especially since the category is most iconic performance at the VMAs of all time, which truly a dozen performances come to mind immediately before I even begin to consider what the most iconic of all time is. I'm talking about Madonna doing Vogue or Madonna with Britney Spears or in the 90s, I'll Be Missing You. Remember that? That was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would even say like Lauryn Hill performing Doo-Wop That Thing is more iconic than this particular Katy Perry performance.
Janet dance doing If in those jeans.
Actually, maybe no one has done jeans better in life than Janet Jackson. She's done them ripped all sorts of ways, all sorts of silhouettes. Mm-hmm.
Beyonce's pregnancy announcement when she did Love on Top, but also Beyonce's Ring the Alarm.
Right. Also, she had a whole medley one year, didn't she too?
Yeah, the Lemonade.
By the way, and of course, don't forget the paparazzi Lady Gaga performance.
The best debut ever.
I mean, just the list goes on. And Britney Spears doing Satisfaction and Oops, I Did It Again. I'm beside myself at this award. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be so upset when it's such a calculated award to give somebody who's just going to show up to the ceremony, which is, of course, the crux of what is wrong with the VMAs at this point. Now they give awards specifically based on who will be there. It's not like the Grammys where there's still a little bit of prestige associated with the Grammys. So if somebody is awarded a Grammy and they're not at the Grammys, there's like no love lost. Like that's fine. We still believe in the sanctity of the Grammys. Whereas if there's dead air at the VMAs, the ceremony looks weird. And people are thinking, why does this show exist if people can't even show up to get the awards?
Yeah, I think that that is the larger problem with the show. And we'll cut right to that after we finish like talking about Katy Perry here. This is a good performance, but I think that, unfortunately, it was a big reminder of the dip in music quality.
Well, she certainly had her huge hits, the number ones like Dark Horse and California Girls, Teenage Dream, etc. And then she tried to slip in the three new tracks. I actually kind of like the new one that interpolates Crystal Waters.
Yeah, with Doechii. He's mine. I'm his. But Doechii looks great. I'm a big fan of Doechii right now. I think that her latest mixtape is fucking fantastic. I saw her perform at the Paper Magazine Fashion Week party last week. She's excellent on stage. I saw Doechii at Coachella as well. I will say that their performance, though fun and a great spotlight for Doechii, because I feel like it was probably her VMA performance debut, it was very much Cardi and Megan at the Grammys.
You are correct. I felt like I had seen it before, I do have to say. I'll also give Katy Perry credit, though. Like, okay, there are songs in here that are not as important as her most famous songs, but in a lot of these occasions where big stars are doing medleys of their hits, like, for instance, Lady Gaga at the Super Bowl, okay, for every poker face, you do get Million Reasons. You know, like, they sort of have to shop around the lesser hits in order to make it a full package.
I think Lifetime's ended great.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was okay, a good song. Performance of that song. It's an okay song. It's one of the better ones that we've heard from this new era so far. Let's get into her speech.
I am actually a fan of it, so I'm curious.
I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it.
It was just bitchy and curt enough while also being sincere.
Yeah, it was between passive-aggressive and aggressive. She clearly had some shit to say about the people online.
Yeah, she said there's no decade-long accidents, referring to her career, which whoever came up with that line, okay, excellent. We love it.
The doctor, probably.
Oh my God, Luke just emerges from backstage like the Phantom.
I thought that her speech was great. I loved her telling people to, you know, shut out the noise and stay offline, et cetera. She kind of beat Chapel to the punch.
Right. Though we'll get to Chapel in a second, since she, of course, made a very splashy VMAs debut this year, too. But, the shutting out the noise, I think, was a cool thing to say. That said, when Chapel was on the red carpet and cursed at some reporter for, I don't know, yelling something at her, it was a paparazzo, I think, or somebody holding a camera. I sort of like how transparent she is about how disgusting those situations can be. Because as you know, when you walk past these like phalanxes of photographers like shooting these
pictures.
It's
a cattle call.
One, it's a cattle call. Two, it's crazy that people can even keep their eyes open. It's so blinding. And then three, it's so stressful. It's so shocking. It's like being in the middle of a traffic jam or something. You do feel like somebody should be yelling, can everybody shut up? So to see her do that was cool. And then seconds later, she was giving an interview to Queer Press, like the logo, I think it was Logo or something. And she gave a darling interview talking about how psyched she is to be near Sasha Colby and all these other drag entertainers who were there. Plain Jane was dressed as Chapel Roan specifically and did a little, they cut to a bunch of these queens and Plain Jane did a little miming of her not wanting to be seen by the photographers. So funny and so classic drag. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And see, that is something that people were quote unquote upset about online. People without any taste. But it's that drag is supposed to be that. It's funny. There's a way to make fun of Chapel Roan without denying the fact that she's a human being who is setting up boundaries. And right. I think that we are getting into this weird point now where I'm just tired of hearing people say that particularly we went too far in defending her. I'm tired of people trying to swing to the opposite end of the pendulum saying she needs to sign up for being a pop star or maybe like she's too angry. You know, it's not giving diva, it's giving attitude or anxiety or fragile. And how many of our pop stars are balls of fragility? So many totally. Of them have anxiety and they deal with them either through drugs or drinking or other things. And she is trying to deal with this in such a open, honest, raw way that I have to commend her for it.
No, and as you said, like how many pop stars years later finally open up about having anxiety or whatever? Like I just saw Shawn Mendes posted a video online talking about his return. He performed at the VMAs last night too, where he made the dubious choice to rock out. Not my brand, girls. But in that video, he basically talks about coming back to music and getting excited for it again. And it really sounds like somebody who was, there's no other way to put it, put through it. Like, it sounds like this entire industry, the way the fans behave, et cetera, has weighed on him for years. And it sounds like he paid a price. So it sounds like Chapel Roan is not just saying, I'm setting up boundaries. It's, I won't pay a price. I'm going to tell you right now when something is inappropriate.
Well, imagine faggots giving any sympathy to Chapel Roan because we know how they treated Shawn Mendes.
Right. Oh, with respect and not SeanCody.com emblazoned pictures. Yeah.
He seems happy, which I'm very glad for him. He wanders around New York City without security most of the time, just reading.
Who is he, Woody Allen?
He seems like a genuinely happy person now. I'm glad that he's making music again, and it's fulfilling him. There was an interview, not an interview, he did a front-facing video on Twitter, which I watched, where he talked about his collaborators and how they sort of got him in love with making music again, because he sort of was just empty and wasn't feeling like he wanted to do it anymore. That said, the song is boring.
Right.
He makes dentist office music.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he doesn't really merge into prestige ever, even though I think he really cares about music in addition to being a performer. Like you can tell like the interest is there. I almost wonder if he would go into like a producing space eventually or something.
Maybe. I love Stitches. I love Stitches back in the day. I love his vocals on Senorita. My favorite song of his is Lost in Japan.
My favorite of his is There's Nothing Holding Me Back. I like it a little frenetic. You know what I mean?
That's what I need. It's just giving too much high school jam band. And I went to an all-boys Catholic school in Milwaukee. Like, the boys were jam banding, playing Yesterday on their guitars and playing Fish. And it was giving me that. Especially with the carpet.
We've had enough.
The carpet, I was like, this is really giving coffee shop.
I also just think it feels a little bit like when you choose the rocker character from The Sims. You know, that's he's making the grand gesture with the guitar and, you know, he felt very archetypal as opposed to artistic.
I mean, back on Chapel, I enjoyed her performance a lot. Chapel Roan did a performance of Good Luck, Babe, which still does not have a music video. And I am very glad that she canceled those tours in Europe and did a VMA performance because now the VMA performance can replace the music video at Afters.
Yes.
I will say my main problem with the VMAs is that it was not iconic. I thought it was a great performance for her and a great debut, but when I'm thinking about Lady Gaga bleeding on the stage, when I'm thinking about the Britney moments, you know, I'm thinking everything at the VMAs just seems too afraid to go one extra step. She was Joan of Arc. Like, why wasn't she burned at the stake?
Right, right. We could have used something a bit saucier. Also, can I just say about her, I'm still used to thinking of her music when I hear it. And, you and I have known Pink Pony Club for years now or whatever. Thinking of that music as fringe, as like, you know, oh, she has a few fans or whatever. And now when I hear this music, it feels like it belongs in the dead center of pop culture. Like someone tweaked something in my brain and now I'm like, oh, this is the music we all love. I mean, it also, she became extremely popular, but it's just, it's weird how the music feels different to me now that it's this popular.
Yeah, you see people do Hot to Go at a party, it feels like, oh, this is for everybody now in a very weird way. And she said also she's going to take off like end of October through May to work on new music. So I'm looking forward to that era when she drops big single next year of the sophomore album. And that one's going to really feel like a cultural moment.
And speaking of cultural moments, I hope After Midnight from this album gets its cultural moment, because I continue to be obsessed with that song in particular from her.
And Super Modern Ultragraphic Girl. What are we doing here?
Yeah. There's room to grow still, and she's grown
she
so much.
She could Thriller this album if she wants to. She could knock out Teenage Dream.
I did think it was both cool and a little telling that the most memorable VMA moments to me were homages. Like Sabrina Carpenter dressed in Madonna's actual Oscars gown from when she performed Sooner or Later, the Oscar-winning Sondheim song from Dick Tracy. It's cool to see that. Like, first of all, who knew that dress still existed? So the fact that she pulled that out and, according to her, got it from Madonna, who she said was very supportive of her, that was nice. That said, what does that mean, ultimately? You just have the dress?
Nothing.
Like, why are we referencing it, really? It's both kind of cool and also kind of nothing.
Yeah, it's sort of that whole Kim Kardashian thing of pulling out a piece that someone has worn before. It's this thing in fashion now where it's sort of archival pieces are popping up all the time. But what is the story here?
Yeah.
Like, you're not doing anything that's related to Sondheim. You're not sort of Breathless Mahoney.
Which I would love for her. Yes.
Yeah. You're more Betty Boo. Yes. But she could do that. I am desperately begging for a Dick Tracy musical on Broadway, by the way.
Smart.
And I'm like, and people always say Megan Hilty, but Sabrina Carpenter, Breathless Mahoney.
Don't hate it. I also just love that she has, you know, your grandpa's fourth wife energy. You know, she's she's standing right by the crypt. She's got the will in this hand.
But even that, there was no story to that. Tate McRae was wearing an old Britney Spears dress.
Yeah, why? And by the way,
story.
And I'm not saying Britney Spears didn't look great in that outfit. Not a particularly interesting outfit that we needed to revisit.
Yeah, but Megan wearing Britney's "I'm a Slave for You" outfit looked great. But then, what else are we doing here? I get that it was the 40th anniversary, so that you want to honor the VMA's past, but I feel like every year of the VMAs lately is honoring the VMAs past and not creating any new reason for the VMAs to exist.
Yes, you don't feel the confidence that we're still in an icon-making era. I think also a problem the VMAs have is it's not that people don't watch music videos anymore, which used to be the chief complaint about the VMAs, you know, that MTV moved another direction and we don't see music videos on it anymore. People are obsessed with music videos. I think, weirdly, what's interesting now is you're less likely to see music that isn't algorithmically delivered to you. So the concept of any one music being considered the best, like the video of the year, sort of is irrelevant now. You know, like if you're a Taylor Swift fan, okay, that's the music you listened to this year, but you didn't really have to watch music videos from, here are other bands that I grew up listening to that weren't particularly my brand, Foo Fighters. You know, you didn't have to watch Rage Against the Machine or whatever, things that would be otherwise competitive.
Korn.
Yeah, Korn. Oh, I had two of those albums, I have to say.
Freak on a Leash was a jam.
I owned the Issues album and Freak on a Leash, yes.
That is actually the problem with the VMAs or sort of MTV in general now, rewarding things like that. You sort of hit the nail on the head with that. People kept saying last night, who's seen Fortnite? Who's seen Fortnite? This is the song of the year. And if you are a Swiftie, it's the only fucking video you've watched all year.
Right.
I've seen it because I like Taylor and I like Post Malone and I've watched the video several times, but it's not one I put on at afters because no one else is into it the way that I am. But we're all in these bubbles now. And even when you're in your bubble of friends and the things that you listen to as a group, that's not going to mirror what other people are watching by themselves.
Right, right. Here's the thing. Among videos she has directed, I think the Fortnite video is pretty impressive. There's some stark stylistic choices, like images that are memorable. So at least it feels more like a contender for video of the year than some of her other wins. But excuse me, the idea that she has won 5 videos of the year.
And 3 in a row.
Yes. To me, it's like if you had a book award and then gave it to Harry Potter every year. My feeling is, yes, definitely the most popular. Yes, qualified and important. You know, that a book is reaching so many people. That said, you're kidding if you're saying it's earned this award by being better than everything else. It's just more popular than everything else and dominating in a monocultural way that I feel like award shows somehow feel really obligated to adhere to. And also, of course, they want her to be at the ceremony, so they give it to her for that reason.
Of course. It's the same way I feel about how we discuss music now, or people discuss music online now, that everyone has sort of been rotted by Stan brain. You talk about how popular something is, how big something is on the Billboard charts. Remember when defending your favorite artist meant defending your own taste?
Yes. Whoa.
You had to say...
You really wrote a poem song with this one. You really wrote a poem with that one. Yeah.
You had to say, this song is good because this artist is great because I dig this like video because you weren't... When we were arguing about music when we were kids, when we were arguing about it in high school, in college, you weren't saying, oh, she's number one on Billboard. Tortured Poets has been number one for several weeks. It's, no, I fucking dig this because it's cool. That's why I like saying I love Reputation. Like, I like the attitude in that album. I like how pissed off she was at that moment. I think it's one of Taylor's more raw albums lyrically and sonically just because of the emotional mess she was going through at the time. Whereas Tortured Poets feels like a cash grab.
Right. And a retread to me, if we're talking about albums like Evermore, Folklore, etc. But I think, not that stan culture is the entire internet. Sometimes it feels like the entire internet based on what you see, what tweets you see passed around. But yeah, there is this notion that popularity means an artist is unimpeachable, that they've accomplished something that no critic can take away from them. And I feel like that's such a gross mindset. Critics are not trying to take away things from artists. They are interested in the art. So it's like, why not get into the ins and outs of it, the ups and downs, and you know what we like and don't like. I feel like that part of stan culture is particularly, I sound like Jane Alexander, former head of the NEA right now, anti-art.
Yeah, and there's this idea that critics critique things because they hate everything and want to bring people down. And maybe that's people with YouTube channels. And maybe that's people online who get off on hate views and hate clicks. But real, genuine critics of music, of film, of television, of books, of art, they do it because they love it. Like, you're not going to be you wouldn't be a theater critic unless you love theater, because why are you going to see a fucking play every night unless you love it? Why are you listening to music all the time unless you love it? Film critics, like, why are you going to film festivals and watching 6 movies in a day unless you genuinely fucking love movies?
Right. There's clearly an adrenaline rush there. And by the way, I just want to say, I have never been to one of these film festivals before. I am so jealous. Half my friends go every year. That's the darkest part of my year, when people are at, like, Cannes. Yeah, you know.
Oh, it can be fun.
I was one time at Sundance, but I didn't get to see anything. I was working there with a company. Anyway, it's on my mind.
I love going to the New York Film Festival. It's nice to just be – it's nice that a festival is occurring in the city that you live in.
Yeah,
so you
could
just go – uptown, and then all of a sudden there's this buzz and shit happening for the premiere of a film, and then you just go home.
Back to the VMAs. What did you think of Megan as a host?
I thought Megan was fun.
She is never not fun to me.
I enjoy Megan. I enjoyed her performance. I didn't like what she was wearing, but the performance is fun, even if this music from this era, I don't really love that much.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of what people are wearing, before I forget. So Taylor Swift wore a kind of yellow plaid ensemble. That
fresh out of Hot Topic.
And fresh out of Cher from Clueless. Somebody online posted a tweet that made me think, do you think Blake Lively is dressing her? It's kind of her version of like fashion, but also accidentally tacky. I don't know.
I think that Taylor has very strong, I think that Taylor loves her friends, but she's a Sagittarius and she has very strong opinions about her friends.
Okay.
I do not believe she thinks Blake Lively has any taste.
It concerns her.
I do not believe that at all.
I'm always curious about her sartorial choices because she always is like, It's neither awful fashion or good fashion. This is something that has been debated online. I'm not the first person to say this.
No, just, of course.
It's just so interesting. Like the pairing of a certain kind of boot with a certain kind of skirt that feels sloppy in a way, though also fitting. Anyway, I don't know. It's like it makes her more approachable and relatable in a way.
I'm sure she supports Blake because she's her girlfriend, but there was an interview that Selena Gomez just gave recently where she talked about how she and Taylor watch Vanderpump Rules and they watch The Valley. And remembering who Selena Gomez was, you remember when she had that YouTube channel?
Yes.
And she would make fun, she and Demi would make fun of Miley.
Gruesome.
like she was a bitch.
Yeah.
And I just sometimes the things that you see, the way Taylor shuts down people, there's no way that she can't be a bitch in private with her friends. And you're not going to be a fan of Bravo without some of that rubbing off on you. So, no, I do not believe that she would ever let Blake Lively come anywhere near her closet.
Do you think Taylor Swift, when she's maybe like being bitchy in a text the way we would, is she always leaving a voice note because it disappears?
I think she probably leaves voice notes. I think a lot of it's in person. But I also think that there are people who – I think that the people who have maintained in her circle would not do that.
Right.
I think that, like, she probably doesn't go deep in that way until you've been perfectly vetted.
Right. And right. There's several rounds. It's like here's Scientology in terms of round numbers. Here's being Taylor Swift's friend way up here.
Because also – there's probably NDAs involved, too.
Definitely.
I mean, Beyonce, if they want to party with the queen, they're going to have to sign a non-disclosure.
Imagine not doing that, please. When she was at that wedding, I was like, where is her assistant passing around the clipboard? Excuse me.
Julius was in the background. Yeah. Julius was in the background looking stressed while she's just singing to Love on Top at her former assistant's wedding. And also in her GQ interview, she said she loved Chapel Roan. And that made me think, her former assistant is this white girl, this millennial. Beyonce definitely danced to Hot to Go at that wedding.
Yes. Did she consider the choreography? Or is it like Hillary Clinton with the Macarena? She's like,
I feel like she is down and has fun. And the clips that we see of Beyonce, we can see that from her. And you can see tiny clips of that from Taylor, even though it's goofy white girl, like her at the U.S. Open,
right.
Being drunk. But I don't know. She seems so much more fun in person and sort of maybe acerbic in person, too, than she's ever going to let us see now.
Right. Yeah, right.
Maybe
right.
In 20 years or something, she'll lean into just being a bitch in interviews. And she'll do that thing where she's like talking about her past contemporaries and what she really thinks about them, which would be so fun.
God willing. You're right. I feel like we probably just have to wait a long time.
Yeah. Also, Taylor has a lot of goodwill for me this week because of the Kamala endorsement, which shouldn't make me excited because it's not like I thought she was a Republican. The way everyone kept saying, she's hugging Brittany Mahomes, that means she's a Republican. But she voted for Biden last time. I don't think that she all of a sudden is like, I'm a Republican. She gives very East Coast liberal vibes.
The panic that seemed to be ensuing about her not having endorsed anybody, give me a break. Obviously, she was going to say something. She posted that one picture, a shadow of Kamala behind her, seemed to indicate that there would be a statement forthcoming. And then she, of course, did. Actually, the one thing that surprised me about the statement she put out, it was clearly written before the debate because they timed the release of this new Harris-Walz friendship bracelet merch with her post. I'm surprised she didn't modify it a little bit more to include one thing said in the debate, because she just said, okay, my values align with Kamala Harris's more than they do Donald Trump's. And she brought up how he used AI images of her, which is, of course, disgusting, to promote his own campaign. But honestly, I mean, he was so ridiculous during the campaign. It could have used one extra, can we believe what we just saw, moment in it, you know?
Right. She used the childless cat lady comment, which J.D. Vance had brought up. But the fact that Trump was talking about eating cats in Springfield, that sort of felt like something you would comment on. But no, it was obviously a predetermined press release. Tree Payne organized it all. And Kamala also walked off the debate stage to The Man.
Would we pick that song for her?
Absolutely not. But I wasn't expecting a walk-off song. I'm expecting at a rally, she's going to walk out to Ready For It.
Yes, that makes more sense. And also just has more like, oh, I'm getting out ready to do something like vote. Whereas The Man, like, that's sort of not the vibe that Kamala's going for. Like, if I were a man, it's like, she's already wearing the Timberlands. She's got the bearing. You know what I'm saying?
Plus, you know that song has my favorite Taylor line ever.
Which is?
He could be my jailer, Burton to this Taylor.
Does that mean she's seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Does that mean she said out loud?
Oh, you know she has.
She's like, let me wiki Sandy Dennis. Has she done it? I want to know. You know that Sandy Dennis is on my pass here at Keep It, right? Like, this is how they make sure I don't lose it.
She's definitely seen it, and she's definitely walked in somewhere and overdramatically said, what a dump.
Wow.
And then laughed at making the reference.
Mm. Maybe she's also seen the play once, too, because there's lots of famous people when they do the play. Usually, you know, it's whatever. Zachary Quinto is in it, et cetera. By the way, I'm going to be tonight with Zachary Quinto and Kumail Nanjiani and some actress, Jane Fonda, at the
Henry's daughter.
Yeah. Yes, Henry's daughter, Bridget's aunt, at the Bourbon Room in Hollywood. And allegedly, they're going to be testing me on some Jane trivia in front of Jane Fonda. I don't know that this can go good for me anyway.
I hope she brought a gun.
Yes, I miss the trivia and look bad. Two, I get the trivia right, and Jane's like, why don't I get away from the fag? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get the fag off the stage. I'm not watching that.
If you didn't get tickets tonight for the Bourbon Room, because it is sold out, sorry, it will be on YouTube eventually, and it'll be on Love It or Leave It on Saturday, so you can listen there, where all of my wonderful jokes will be edited down to digestible portions.
Who else did we love? We brought up Sabrina Carpenter, but her performance was great.
Yeah, she did a medley of the three very, very famous Sabrina songs at the moment, which are Espresso, Please, 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 and Taste, which is the one I'm replaying the most at the moment, which seemed like a novel observation, but it turns out the other two are just two of the most played songs of all time, and I needed to move on to a third. Also an homage to Britney, the astronaut thing from Oops, I Did It Again. Also a bit of a VMA's homage, since obviously the Moon Man is the name of the trophy.
Moon Person now.
It's not the Moon Person.
I love that an announcer said Moon Person, and then they immediately cut to Cyndi Lauper introducing Sabrina, and she said Moon Man.
She's like, I don't remember that. Also, always good to see Cyndi Lauper, who is basically retired at this point. I'm sure can still belt her ass off.
Living off that Kinky Boots money.
Right. Tony winner. She's an oh, shorter of an egot. Lenny Kravitz was also there. Lil Cool J was there. Some people just get to be at award shows. Like, do you have a slot for me? I'm going to go ahead and do that. Like, Lenny Kravitz did the In Memoriam at the Oscars. You know, just whatever. He gets to show up.
He's in his cool era now. He's always been cool, but he's in his cool, like, nostalgic era.
Yeah.
Remember when he was working out at the gym in leather pants?
It was so shocking. The pants.
And he's just around as Zoe's dad.
Right. And his body is sheet metal.
Yeah.
And he's 60 years old. It's really crazy. Oh, I wanted to say quickly about Sabrina Carpenter's speech she gave. for the Song of the Summer or whatever nonsense award they decided to give her. I like how she addressed the fans. There seemed to be, she wasn't going for super bubbly and super quirky. She was just like, she goes, it sounds cheesy, but I have the best fans. Thank you. I enjoyed the kind of low keyness of what she said.
I enjoyed that too, because haven't we gotten sick of artists shouting out their fans' name?
Yeah.
Swifties, Hotties, the Barbs, enough.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're radicalizing them. Stop it. We know where this leads.
although I did love Beyonce in her GQ interview saying, when she said that she loves Miley, she says, I love my backseat rider. And she said, I'm a smiler.
Oh, okay. She's been paying attention. You know what? I'm always curious about her media diet, what she's sitting around watching or not watching.
I feel like she watches and listens to everything. She mentioned so many artists in there. She mentioned some new indie people too. Then she also said, I'm watching The Shy and House of the Dragon.
All right. Okay. So she's lightly dialed in.
Yeah. LL Cool J was great.
Imagine him not being great. He delivered on NCIS for, I believe, 136 seasons.
I wish we'd been recording before this. Lewis and I were trying to figure out if NCIS LA was still on, and it ended last year. And then I went down a rabbit hole on Wikipedia, discovering just how many NCIS series there are.
And there's one called NCIS Origins, in case you were wondering, how did this thing all start? Take me there.
The creation of the program.
Yeah, right. NCIS LA. I believe it ended because Linda Hunt said, fucking enough. I am a million years old. Let me go home.
Yeah, so he was great. And honestly, LL songs still kind of go off at a party when he did Doing It.
Oh, I love his attitude in his early music. Going back to Cali, etc. Yeah.
By the way, I also want to do a shout out to the very hot men who showed up at the VMAs. Rao Alejandro.
Oh, yes.
Gorgeous. And somehow I'd never noticed what he looked like, even though he's came out with Rosalia at Coachella when I was there. But I was very high.
You don't say.
Performance. Yeah.
I could finish that sentence. Yes. Like a detective.
And I also discovered what a Benson Boone is.
This man can sing.
He can sing. And speaking of Sabrina, there's a reaction video of her going, what? When he does his backflip off the piano.
That is stunts. Parkour, as it pertains to balladry, we've rarely seen. I can't believe he's doing that. Yeah, he's the one who used to be, he was on American Idol and then dropped out before the semifinals. And now is this giant singer. Also, this Teddy Swims is still a new name to me. He sounded amazing.
Yeah. Oh, Teddy Swims sounds fucking great. I should actually listen to his album because that's actually the kind of music that I love listening to.
Also, by the way, A Man Who Looked Hot, the guy from Maneskin or whatever. Woof. He looked like a silent film actor. It looked like somebody who has like a closeted tryst with Rudolph Valentino. There's no proof that Rudolph was queer. I'm just throwing that out there.
Damiano David, hot as hell.
Yes. Great look at the VMAs too.
Yeah. But going back to the thing about our bubbles of music, I feel like I've never heard of Benson Boone before. And I've never heard the song.
Even though he's like a wild chart entering, he went up the charts faster than Chappell Roan did this year.
Yeah, but I listen to what I listen to, and I listen to women. I very rarely listen to people who are men.
No, you think I know it's? I think it's controversial. You know that I don't believe they need voice boxes or like what we're doing right now. To me, is anathema to what life should be about.
Stan a man? Why?
Gross. Right. What's he going to do with that?
But anyway, he's cute.
Yeah.
And, you know, rolling around like he's in a video game. So he was in Legends of the Hidden Temple on that stage.
I was going to say, he was in the ball pit at a 90s Burger King. Yes.
So I'm going to tune in. And I think that's pretty much it for the VMAs. I mean, the less said about that opening performance, the better.
That was tough, yes. And also just shout out to the VMAs. The red carpet there, though, there will always be like 15 people where I feel like they made up celebrities just to keep you on your toes. Like they'll throw somebody out there. It's like, please welcome Chuck. And like you have to just pretend that that was real.
This is so mean. There's a photo of Chris Olsen on the red carpet. Meghan Trainor's BFF,
yes.
As you know, TikToker. And someone posted it with a video, and they said, zero camera flashes.
People are so rude. Brutal to be on a red carpet. Brutal.
I also want to say a brief keep it. I'll throw in one. A keep it to people who don't really know anything about the industry trying to do a funny drag online. There was a photo going around of Tate McRae with her name being held off camera on the red carpet. And they do that for everybody.
Right, because the photographers have to write down the name to attribute everything. Yeah,
but they even do it for Taylor Swift and Beyonce because they have to be organized by name afterward to be put into Getty.
Right, yeah. Because when Getty messes up, that's like a huge deal, yes.
Yeah, so that's when you mess up Black people's names and someone gets fired.
Right, hopefully. You never know.
Last thing on Miss Tate McRae, though. She and Tinashe are two amazing fucking dancers who were just at the VMAs to present.
Strange. Yes. It feels like, by the way, there were, thousands of performances?
Yeah.
Surely we could have gotten something with those two ladies together.
Song of the Summer, Weird did not have Nasty at all represented.
Yes. A song, by the way, that I am not sick of. When I hear it come on in any place, it's appropriate. Whether it's like a restaurant or Barry's or whatever.
But part of me wonders about the cutoff and submissions and whether or not she is on tour, so maybe she didn't want to perform. That shit's always weird, too, because I feel like Chapel Roan had to cancel tour dates in Europe to be able to perform at the VMA. She had to rehearse. Right. So maybe there's that, too. But I also don't know the VMA cutoff, because why was Paint the Town Red nominated for something? Didn't that song come out 10 years ago?
Yes. Obama was president. It was tough. Yes.
Right. Do you have a last thing to say? A keep it to the VMAs?
Maybe I'll just say something regarding the past of the VMAs, which is I do still think, and I've said this before, I think the Chris Rock-hosted VMAs might still be the greatest award show of all time.
It's so funny.
Yes. And also, I mean, like the amount of amazing things that happened there. You have the mothers of Tupac and Biggie Smalls reunited, Afeni Shakur and Valletta Wallace. That was fabulous. The drag tribute to Madonna. Ricky Martin, Lauryn Hill. If you watch an entire, I need somebody to watch that entire ceremony front to back and confirm to me that it's still good.
Yeah. And also, I will never forget the line from Chris Rock about Britney. She went from Mickey Mouse Club to the strip club.
So simple. That's what we call parallelism. Yes.
We used to have real pop culture.
Yes. We were all focused on the one thing at the one time. And sometimes that one thing was corn.
Honestly, I think that's the way you fix pop culture. We, at some point, have to escape personal monoculture. We have to escape the bubbles. There has to be a thing where Spotify even used to give you in the algorithm songs that you've never heard of from artists that you don't even listen to, and now they just give you stuff you've heard before.
No, right. It should be court mandated. Have you listened to a song with a trombone in it today? Do it one time. I'm not saying you have to become a ska fan. God knows I'm not.
All right. That's our episode this week. I hope you enjoyed our bonus. Keep it, and we'll see you next week. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Chris Lord, and our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James.
Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Sheng, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to Matt DeGroat, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.